Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction. We are glad to be back with you this week. We got the whole cast in the studio.
Woo!
For the first time in a while. Actually,
back, baby.
I take that back. We don't have Bennett.
We're
this
done.
Week,
Bennett still
but out. Next week we will have the whole cast back in the studio.
Yes.
For our once again weekly news reaction show. We promise to turn episodes around faster so the content you're getting from us is more relevant than ever. And of course, bringing you all the hard-hitting reporting and commentary on the news. David Rand, how are you doing, dude?
I'm doing okay. It's so weird because this is a super serious, sad topic.
Yeah.
And yet I had really good news today. And so I'm like in a good mood and I feel weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I'm in a similar position. Yeah. And I imagine a lot of people probably are. Like, you're just going about your life and everything is all good. And then you open up your news site on your browser and it's that.
Awfulness.
Yeah.
Awfulness. That's what he wanted. Ah!
Kyle's going to turn the lights off so we look extra
moody.
Extra good and
we,
moody.
We need some mood lighting.
We do.
Mood lighting.
Yeah. Well, the mood is dark. There's no getting around that. And, of course, if you hadn't figured it out yet, what we are talking about this evening is the Minnesota school shooting that just occurred.
Yesterday.
And, Kyle, why don't you lead us off with some of the basics of what's going on around this for folks that have not seen it.
Yeah, so I was thinking, let's just get into some of the statistics and kind of the damage that happened before we open up the discussion to talk about the politics around it and what the shooter's motivations or what we might hypothesize the shooter's motivations are, because he left a journal behind. So yeah, this happened yesterday, August 27th. It happened at a Catholic school. It's the Annunciation Catholic Church, which houses a pre-K through 8th grade school in South Minneapolis, Minnesota. It occurred early in the day. It was like 8:30 during a morning mass, which was kind of celebrating the new year because this was like the first week kids are back in school. And the shooter claimed there's two dead children, ages 8 and 10. And then there was 18 injured. 15 of those injured are aged anywhere between 6 and 15. And then there's three adults in that injuries. All the injuries are expected to survive, although there's like one that's critical condition. Wow. Last I saw. I don't know what that's like this morning. So numbers might be different from what I when I put these all in together. Then the shooter died from a self-inflicted gun wound. The shooter's profile is Robin Westman, born Robert Westman, which this is where a lot of the drama around this is occurring. Mm. It is somebody that legally changed their name and identified as trans, changed their name back when they were 17 years old. So back when they were in high school. And so that's back in 2020. This shooter was 23 years old. And he actually attended the school, graduated from it in eighth grade. So this is a school that he was very familiar with, attended it. And although he obviously hasn't been there in several years, his mom used to work there. She was retired. She retired a few years ago. So his mom was like a office person, I think, at the school for several years. And also just family life. Parents divorced after a marriage of 25 years, had two other siblings. And I know there's been rumors starting to go around. I know Alex Jones has been saying this, but this might go into some of our potentially more nefarious activities here, where his father was apparently a CIA contractor. I don't know too much about this, but there is that piece of evidence that is lingering there. I don't know how confirmed that is yet, though. So I don't want to like.
Yeah, the speculation is the assumption right now is that he was a contractor working on geospatial stuff for the DOD, for the CIA, a company that was contracting with them.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it could be coincidence, but I know, Joe, you pulled in a Alex Jones clip. Alex Jones, got to be careful talking about school shootings here, bud.
This is very
I
true.
I bet he's being very careful right now.
That he's being very careful.
Only reporting the facts. Yeah. That's what's going on now.
Yeah, here's a clip from that.
James Westman, let's read about him.
This is the father.
Very interesting.
Like, he has it printed out.
Senior application developer at ESRI. What is ESRI? Well, ESRI is the leading original geospatial satellite ground mapping GPS coordinate system for the Pentagon, Google, and everything else. He's been working there since 96, 29 years, 7 months. And at a whole bunch of other very interesting places.
The we don't need to listen to too much of this. It's really just biographical background here, but that is the evidence of the father's background there.
Yeah, I haven't seen any like hard, I guess part of it is maybe you could just go look on LinkedIn. I haven't done that and looked at this, but worth noting if that is true, could be coincidental, could be, but there is always kind of the MK Ultra ideas that exist around school shootings. So always worthy of keeping in mind, but
yeah. And we will get into a little bit of that when we begin speculating a bit later.
Mm-hmm. And so Robin, he was 23 years old and he worked at a medical cannabis dispensary called Rise. The manifesto, which I want to get into the manifesto quite a bit. He really didn't like this place. Like he had considered shooting up this place.
And specifically
the cannabis spot.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Like he hated his coworkers a lot. Like there was a name that he referenced a few times where I think there was like a very particular person that he really didn't like there too. Hmm. The manifesto kind of had him really hating this place. And he left his job August 16th. So just a little over a week ago. And after he was disciplined for tardiness and being absent and just being a bad worker.
It's got to be hard to get disciplined at a weed shop.
You would think so.
I mean, potheads aren't known for their industriousness.
Are you stereotyping?
A little bit.
I think that is accurate.
It's said with love.
Yeah. As a former alleged potential.
No, I'm not one to use the substance.
Oh, okay.
I will say his goodbye letter, reading his goodbye letter, which is separate from the manifesto. Like those are separate documents. A lot of people are kind of saying the goodbye letter was the they're different things.
Yeah.
It was a very good anti-vaping ad. He very much blamed vaping for his lung issues, which he believed he had cancer, but he wouldn't get a checkup on it because he thought that would be a death sentence for him. I have theories around that on where the psychology was, but he very much was like blaming vaping for potential health problems that he had in the lead up to all this. And he talks about it a lot in the manifesto as well. Wow. Other kind of just like getting the profile together, he had no previous criminal history. He bought the guns legally. He bought rifle, shotgun, pistol. They were what he used. He fired 116 rifle shots, 3 shotgun shells, and 1 handgun round, which malfunctioned. Hmm. And then he had a weapon he used for himself
it was a revolver.
Yeah, it was a revolver.
Yeah.
He had that separate. In his YouTube video, he even said, that one's for me. Yeah. So,
Very dark.
Oof.
Yeah.
The video was released very early. I mean, I saw the headline, and I think within the hour, I saw an entire like 11-minute plus clip of this kid, which apparently was previously published to YouTube, circulating on the internet.
He scheduled it.
Oh, wait, he scheduled it to post.
Yeah,
at the time
on his channel, which was called Robin W, which YouTube has deleted.
Huh.
But my big question here is, with so many other school shooters, particularly those in the trans community that the mainstream media is so quick to suppress, and the information gets buried so quickly, how were people able to find this and get it published across all sorts of social media platforms so quickly? How do we know so much about this guy so quickly when we don't know anything about Thomas Crooks and we're over a year later from that event? So to me, there's some question marks, and we'll get a little bit more into that stuff later, about how we know so much about this person so quickly and why this information is getting out when it is.
It is interesting too, because I vividly remember a few years ago, there was like a grocery store shooting that happened. And I remember just being on my Twitter feed. Somebody was like restreaming this. And I thought I was watching like Call of Duty gameplay. And it was somebody like going in and mowing people down in a grocery store at one point. And it is one of those things where like these things do get out there pretty quickly on these like no-name accounts. I don't really know how that ends up happening.
Right. Who goes and tracks this down? Right. How do they know to go look for Robin W on YouTube to know that this is the kid that's shooting up the school?
It might be algorithmic. New episode drops and it just selects for a couple of people with, you know, similar consumption preferences to the user, right? And then They're like, oh my God, this is the shooting that just happened. They watch it, they send to people, it blows up. And the algorithm picks it up and then starts showing it to more.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable theory. I'm still curious how like other people know to connect those dots. Because, you know, how do you know that the kid, you know, has stuff written on his magazines? Like, you see that in the video, but how do you know that happened at the shooting? Because like the shooting is just happening. Like, it's tightly controlled. There's going to be a police perimeter. Information is not going to get out from there for quite a long time. I'm just really, there's a weird gap for me in how this information gets out so quickly after an event.
How things get from point A to point B on that. Yeah, that is an interesting thought. I'm not entirely sure on that, especially because how quick YouTube brought it down. That's the thing. Because like we're not going to show any of that footage or the manifesto, largely because I believe it's a bannable offense on YouTube. And I assume on other platforms as well. I think like Twitter, Reddit, 4chan are probably the only places that you could actually get it.
And you can get it. And interestingly, a lot of it is written in Cyrillic. He seemed to have some kind of obsession with Russian culture and language. He was learning Russian as well. So a handful of people on Twitter specifically have run the manifesto through AI to translate some of this like broken English and Cyrillic combination into English.
Because he wrote it like phonetically in English. Like, it was like Cyrillic letters written phonetically in English.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying that kind of properly.
Not used like a cipher, but just kind of what it was.
It's like you're using the letters of a different alphabet to spell words in a different alphabet.
Yeah.
So it kind of works like a cipher. It would be hard for anyone to read.
I suppose.
But then the AI goes through and kind of translates it. That's how I read it. I read an AI translation of it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the broad basics there of the event that occurred. Also on the Russia fetish, like there is kind of like a Russia fetish. That
there seemed
like
to be,
He, in the video, he shows what he was going to wear in it. And it was this FSB shirt, which is the,
It was actually a KMFDM shirt, which is like a rock band, like a metal band with an FSB patch on one side and a Minnesota flag on the other side. Yeah. And in the video, he says, strangely, maybe I'll look enough like a cop that I won't get rushed immediately and I'll actually be able to do more damage.
Yeah, I'll
like,
look official enough.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting thing about this video that came out is how obsessed this kid is. And this is corroborated in the manifesto as well. How obsessed he is with school shootings, with school shooters. He idolizes them. He has fantasized about doing this for years. And wants to inflict as much damage as possible, specifically on children. Like, that is his motivation here, which has all sorts of really dark stuff around it that we'll get into. But
yeah, he specifically, there's a portion in the manifesto where he's talking about, so like the biggest thing that was holding him back from doing this, he's fantasized about doing this for years at this point. He's fantasized since he was in school doing it. But the biggest thing holding him back all the time was his family. He's like, I love my family. I don't want to disgrace my family name, yada, yada, yada. But there's all these series in the manifesto where he's talking about, should I shoot? I would like to shoot a school, but I'm too old to shoot a school now because I would be tracked immediately because like I'm not going to blend in. Like, they're going to be like, what's this guy doing approaching here, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So then he's like, oh, maybe I should do a mall. And he's like, I really like the idea of hiding amongst people for hours before I do the deed. So it's like people don't know the monster is among them. Like he talks about it like that. But then he was like, but I don't want to shoot a bunch of adults because like they're going to know they're going to understand what's happening. I want to shoot kids because of the confusion that they have. Like there's like this fetishization of the confusion of young children in that way. And he goes through all these like ideas of like, should I shoot a concert venue? Should I shoot all this type of stuff? And he is using different reference points of other shooters and stuff like that. He's like, these guys did it really well. These guys were like retarded. Like he would say that like these guys were retarded in their plans on how they did it. And he's like kind of like scoring them and ranking them in a sense.
Jesus.
Cause like, and he's like, I want a high kill count. Like he's kind of gamifying it in his head.
Whoa.
But then when he kind of stops talking about like, I don't want to disgrace my family, he goes into this idea. And this is where some of the politics come in, where he's like, maybe I should choose a target that some group would think is heroic, like a Mangione effect. So he's like, maybe I target an oil executive. Maybe I target a corrupt politician. Maybe I target like a synagogue. So the Free Palestine people will like me, like that kind of a thing. And then it won't bring disgrace to my family name. Then you flip over the page and he's like, no matter what I do, it's going to bring disgrace to my family name. So he just abandons that thought process. It's very self-aware. Like it's like surprisingly
strangely self-aware.
And how he goes about it.
The premeditation, I mean, I haven't, this is novel for me because I don't feel like in past events like this, we've ever gotten this much knowledge into the inner workings of the mind of the person that did it. Say like the Unabomber with, you know, a vast manifesto in that way. This one, like with the video and with the writing and with the long chronology leading up to this, like you get a really unprecedented look into what he was thinking in this process. And it's really weird. And again, there's a thing about it where I'm like, why are we getting so much information on this person? Like, how is this happening?
The journal is also, so I've read a lot of shooter manifestos. I used to study psychology. I used to always kind of be kind of interested in that. So I would always kind of like scour and kind of see like, what are these shooters like saying before they go into this? This was very different from a lot of shooter manifestos. Oftentimes they almost read like a poli-sci thesis, where this one was very like in a flow state. It's like his journal over the course of several months. So you see like his train of thought from the beginning of him writing this journal into like a week before he does it. And it's actually like kind of calm, cool, and collected in the earliest stages. But then you'll end up having like, whoa, this page gets crazy. This page gets crazy. And then he like calms down a bit and it's like, whoa, that page gets crazy again. And he's like ranting and stuff. But it wasn't really like a political thesis. Like it wasn't like, this is my political thesis and this is the message I want to put to the world. His thing was more like, my message is that there is no message. Praise nihilism.
Yeah.
Like, and he actually, like he said that in the manifesto.
Yeah.
It's like praise nihilism.
Yeah.
Like it's more like, I'm going to war with people who believe in things and people who have meaning.
Yes.
Right. Like that's what it was. It was like this ideology of like, I have to crush meaning and I have to crush belief. So he would rant about Christians. He would rant about Muslims. Like he would rant about religious folks in general. It wasn't like a particular, like I hate Jews or I hate Christians or whatever. It was much more like, it's like actually kind of deeper than that. It wasn't like a particular group.
Right. Because you notice like in the video, he's got scribbling, you know, scrawling stuff like written and drawn all over his weapons, his magazines, all sorts of stuff. And it's not necessarily exclusive of any religion or to any religion, but there's like, where is your God now is written on one. 6 million wasn't enough is written on one of his rifles. Like
Inshallah was on one.
Kill Donald Trump is written on one of them. Like all sorts of random, like kind of just hateful things written against a variety of you know, people.
But it's groups. Like, it's obviously directed towards the things he dislikes the most.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not especially with the Luigi thing. I think that's interesting. Did you guys see that? I did see one thing that had like a bunch of Luigi, the video game characters all pasted on one side of
I was thinking Mangione.
Well, no. I think that's the reference.
Is it?
Yeah. So
he referenced all these different shooters on his stuff.
Yeah. So he references Mangione directly, but there's a page in the notebook that's like a bunch of stickers of the video game character, what I assume would be a reference to Mangione.
It is, yeah. Right. 100% that's what he's doing. Yeah. He was very calculated and kind of like, I like these shooters, I don't like these shooters. They did a poor job kind of a thing. And he looked at it like an art.
It's disturbing.
Is very disturbing. Yeah. And also there's the trans side, actually. Let me get out of this. On the trans side of it, this is coming from the New York Post. And this is kind of their interpretation of some of the manifesto is a Minneapolis school shooter, Robin Westman, confessed he was tired of being trans. I wish I never brainwashed myself. What he kind of goes into here was, there was actually some interesting quotes in here. I regret being trans. I wish I was a girl. I just know I cannot achieve that body with the technology we have. I can't afford that. I like feeling sexy and cute, but my face never matches how I feel. I hate my face. Maybe that's why I like furries so much. You can give yourself a new body and face. I want to be that blackface mask on Beyonce's body, Lamau. There's a lot of Lamauing that goes on in the journal.
He's laughing his ass off.
There's a lot of like, yeah, there's a lot of lamowing.
Do people say that? Lamau? I've never heard that before.
L-M-A-O?
I've just always spelled it out. This is just a cultural subnote here.
Yeah.
I just want to know if I'm saying it wrong.
No clue.
Let us know in the comments. Do you say Lamau or L-M-A-O? Weirdest comment request for this video. But
how do you laugh on the internet? Are you a raffle?
I'm more of a crying, laughing emoji kind of guy. But.
Yeah. But so like there's kind of that dynamic of there's a regret of being trans thing that's embedded in there. I was actually surprised there wasn't a whole lot of trans stuff in the I was actually shockingly surprised how little there was in the journal.
Yeah.
Reading through the whole thing.
But not unsurprisingly, though, this is the component, as you mentioned at the outset, that the cultural right is really digging into and saying like, you know, the trans, it's the trans issue that's the problem here, just the same as the left is saying it's the guns, the right saying it's the trans. But I think we can agree, and Kyle has, you know, some interesting thoughts on this, as do I, that like there's a deeper layer here. It's the trans ideology is a symptom of something that's much deeper that goes back to the nihilism.
The nihilism thing is the big deal.
And it's, you know, it's this turning away from things that have meaning, that have purpose, and, you know, saying I am my own God and I can make myself the way that I want to make myself, and sort of separating from anything that has virtue seemingly.
It's, So the biography that I'm getting here is that, and sorry, I'm the least up on things of the group because I just travel in today.
It's good.
So
ask apologies. Questions.
Is graduates eighth grade from this Catholic school and then goes to, I assume, public school or some other school. In that process of, you know, preteen, early teen to an adult, he gets into furries, trans stuff,
Lamowing gender ideology,
internet culture.
There's a lot of internet culture spread throughout the journal.
It's at some point, deep. Psychologically, there's a tremendous amount of resentment towards the being, the social order, which goodness is, itself, you know, that sort of thing. So he's using this as an expression and like revenge against something. But this was curious about the last trans shooter that shot up that school. I can't remember her name.
The Nashville shooter?
Yeah, the Nashville shooter. Covenant Nashville? That's right, yeah. And that... they also went to that school, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and like
prior student.
Yeah. Was it like this? You have a hard time believing that the school like was like awful and abusive.
Yeah.
So like, but I think that's like the easy place people go with it. They don't see it as like the nihilistic statement,
right?
And it's hard to get there emotionally as a regular person.
Well, and what's weirder understand. Here that doesn't comport again is to have that sort of nihilistic worldview, but also have this like outpouring of love and appreciation for their family. You would think there would be some kind of trauma in their life, familial or otherwise, that would cause this sort of thing to take root.
I will say in the later portions of the journal. So early on, he talks about like, I wouldn't kill my parents in this because like a lot of the journal is like his flow state, just like scribbling ideas down and him kind of fantasizing about doing shootings and kind of like, how would I do it? Because he has like, it's like a fetish. Like that's the way I would describe it after reading it, especially because it's not like planned out writing in a journal. It's like flow state writing in a journal. And he's like, I wouldn't kill my family. But then later on, he starts kind of considering that, where he starts to go down this, my lung problems are getting worse. I'm afraid to buy the gun too early because I might snap and do something before I get to do like my big event kind of a thing. So he didn't want to buy the gun too soon. And he's like, I would be worried if my parents said something that kind of irked me in the moment. And then I just decided to do them then and then just go on my spree after that kind of a thing. Like he talks about that.
What's interesting that is like the model there is like, he doesn't have any reins on his own actions. Mm-hmm. He's like, I got to have to plan to not that effect that I'm not really in control of myself. Yeah. So what is in control? Like, what's there?
Great, you know,
what
question.
Is that thing, that impulse that he's having?
Very good question.
What is that?
I mean, my personal view is that there are definite threads of like some kind of demonic possession happening here. You know, I mean, and you could look at it from a clinical perspective and say maybe it's schizophrenia. I'm not a psychologist, nor am I a theologist, so neither of these are really my like wheelhouse. But in the video, there's a couple sections where he's sort of like acting out scenes, but there's sections where you feel like he is talking to someone or something else inside of him.
It feels
where he's like arguing with this other thing. And Kyle, if you want to go to the bottom, there's the self-portrait of the manifest in the manifesto. There's a drawing that he drew in this journal that is him looking into a mirror, and in the being in the mirror is a demon resembling Moloch. And there's Cyrillic scribblings above it that when translated with AI say things, you can't see it in this image, but they're right up above this drawing here, that say things like, who am I? I don't want to do this, help. And then at the bottom, kill yourself, kill. So like this sort of like there's a person in there that's like not evil, that's trying to escape whatever control he is under, whatever that might be. That might be, you know, some sort of MK Ultra programming too. And like, we're kind of skipping ahead to maybe more of the speculative side of things down below. But, sure. But these are my theories that are going on right now, because this person doesn't make coherent sense as a person, like at all.
My reading is that situation in the video actually makes a bit more sense after reading the manifesto. Cause what I gauged he was doing in that was he has these sections where he talks about some shooting where there's like footage of a kid asking the shooter, like of one of the school shootings of the past. I can't remember which one, might've been Columbine or something. Where the kid's like asking like, why are you doing this? And like, and he like venerated what the shooter said, cause he thought it was like kind of badass, and like as the art form of the entire thing of like what he's doing there, it's like, he's looks at it as like a art form. So like I saw what he was doing there in that schizophrenic thing where it was like, he was like imitating the kid talking to him and then how he was responding to the kid. And he was kind of like theatrically playing that out.
He's fantasizing about being in the role of the Columbine shooter.
It seemed less schizophrenic. Cause like, than it was that to me.
Sure.
But I could see the schizophrenic argument, because he was kind of there's like this theater kid thing that he's doing there. I don't know if he was a theater kid or not. That'd be interesting, but
don't know.
But there's definitely like a character that he's in dialogue with. That's his conscious split personality, schizophrenia.
Well, it's kind of like, how am I going to be remembered in this? Right. Like there's kind of that thing is like, what is the character? Like he kind of talks about myth crafting for the thing. And that's kind of when he's talking about like not wanting to disgrace his family. And he's trying to think of ways that he might be able to conduct the shooting in a way that wouldn't put shame on his family name.
Yeah.
Like there's the myth crafting element of like, what is the narrative after I do this? What is it going to be?
Yeah.
Like he has that type of stuff in mind, but it actually seems like, it seems to me that if I was just psychoanalyzing here, it seems to me that as he got closer and closer to this, he was maybe losing more control of his mind, and he was getting a little bit crazier. Like, and especially you kind of see that in the journal stuff and him being absent from work and things like that, where it almost seems like he was losing control. Cause he like at the end of the day, he didn't get the high kill count that he was hoping for. Right. He only got two. He could have been much worse. Thank right. God. There's like that kind of thing there where it's like, I almost feel like he did rush his plan a little bit on this in a sense. Like that's actually kind of my reading on it, where it's like, I don't know, but there's also an element here too, where, cause like he kept feeling like he had to rush and rush and rush because of his quote unquote cancer, but he never got the cancer checked out. Like part of me almost feels like he admits to being like self-grandizing and kind of having a God complex or superiority complex. There's a part of me that almost feels like the cancer element of this that he claims to have without getting checked up or knowing if he actually has cancer is almost him filling a story in his head where like, he doesn't want to know if he doesn't actually want to have cancer. He kind of wants that to be part of the story kind of a thing.
And he wants it to be more, it's hard to even use the word but in his mind, more noble, right? Cause he's like, I'm going to die anyway, so I'm going to demonstrate to the world how meaningless everything is.
I think there's some of that going in there. Like you can't even really trust his writings.
Now he serves like a purpose in his mind that he wants the world to see.
That's ironic.
Yeah.
It is kind of ironic.
It is it's deeply ironic. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Well, so obviously I think that's a pretty good synopsis of the motivations and the event that happened. And there's been, as to be expected around a tragic event like this, a tremendous amount of outpouring on the internet. You know, clearly condolences to the ones lost and the families that are suffering. And also political barbs being thrown back and forth by the typical cast of characters in the media who are trying to spin this for their political gain.
I haven't seen anything, but let me just make some predictions.
Okay.
Okay. So
that's a good idea.
I've literally been on an airplane all day. So I'm guessing that the anti-Second Amendment crowd came out and said, this is why we got to ban guns. Don't pray. Something like that. Prayers are not enough. That message.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The prayers are not enough is a big. That's,
really?
That's like landed. That's actually huge. Like the center of the conversation.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa. Okay. Good guess. And then, I haven't seen anything else. Oh yeah, and I imagine the trans thing is probably big. Like people are using this to say bad things about the trans.
Something I'll add on that, just since we're still talking about the manifesto a bit, is he specifically says that he should target gun-free zones. Like he's like we should. I'm gonna look at it like the Aurora shooter, where his internet search history was actually him searching for gun-free zones, and he's like, that's obviously the most logical thing to do. Like that, like he says that in the manifesto.
Well, I mean,
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're going to encounter unarmed people.
Yeah, and that's not the fault of the pro Second Amendment people to point out that how dangerous it is to have those. Thanks.
Yeah, you're advertising what are the best places to shoot.
Yes.
Like, that's kind of what you're doing.
Yes.
Right.
Well, and that's actually the thing, too, where this guy, like, there's definitely kind of the commie vibes here, but there are things in his ideology that you could probably paint as extreme left-wing or extreme right-wing. Like, he was super racist, actually. Mm. He was, and it wasn't towards, like, just the Jews or something like that. He had a line in there where it was like, I've tried so hard for so many years not to be racist, but I just can't help myself. And he's like, I can't help not being racist. And then he goes on, he's like, Indians are stinky. And like, starts talking about Arabs, starts talking about how much he hates Mexicans. And, it's this thing where you could like, so like the people on the left are like, he was a white supremacist. And he was like, well, that's kind of right.
Yeah.
But then like the people on the right is like, he was trans and he was like anti-Israel. And he was like, it was like, that was also right. Like all of the above are right. But everybody's trying to isolate the singular thing that helps their political ideology.
Everyone wants to capture the narrative.
Yeah. Right.
But the part of that is a portrayal of like the facts.
Right.
Because there's no, the capture narrative, the true narrative is he did this to spit in the face of the God of the universe. Like that's why he did it.
Yes.
Right. Not to galvanize a movement on Israel or against Israel or something like that.
And to kind of get what you're getting at here, Joe, here's like kind of the beginnings of the thoughts and prayers stuff here, which there is kind of an ironic thing here too, where like the thoughts and prayers aren't enough thing kind of plays into his mentality in a sense.
The there's shooter's
kind of,
mentality?
Yeah. It kind of falls in line with that a little bit. It's kind of interesting.
I could definitely see that. I mean, the context of it being done at a Christian school during mass is, I mean, that part of this thoughts and prayers aren't enough piece is like particularly like disgusting
and tone deaf.
Like, oh, completely
tone deaf,
but just more than that, like really gross.
Yeah.
So to cue up this clip, this is the mayor, Jacob Frey, talking, and this is kind of just like right in the aftermath of this.
And don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground. They should be able to go to school or church in peace without the fear or risk of violence, and their parents should have the same kind of assurance.
So that's the mayor. I also want to cue up Jen Psaki because this one was very
cringe to say the least. And I want to forewarn the audience: if you are in any way offended by fake crying, turn the volume down
for the first 30 seconds of this because it's kind of cringe. But here's Jen Psaki, former press secretary under Biden. On MSNBC talking about this, kind of echoing the same sentiment around thoughts and prayers.
And all they should be hoping to do is have someone to sit with at lunch or someone to play with on the playground. And they should be waiting to hear an update when they get home. And that is not what these parents at the school experienced today. Sorry, this is a tough one. Having your child killed while they are sitting in a pew for a morning prayer service is not what any parent should have to worry about.
And I felt a mixture of anger and a lot of anger and emotional exhaustion about this today, as I'm sure many of you have, because we have been here so many times, so many times. And yet again, like clockwork, half the politicians in our country have little more to offer than thoughts and prayers. That is all they are offering. Join all of us in praying for the victims, was Vice President J.D. Vance's response today. That's what he said. That's it. Please join me in praying for everyone involved, Trump wrote. We have seen this play out over and over again. There is a shooting, out of the crying, then come the thoughts and prayers, and then comes the attempt to shift the focus. This is what always happens. You're going to start seeing narratives. You're already seeing them. They're already out there, about how the shooter was trans. You're going to see narratives about how the shooter appeared to be anti-Trump and anti-Semitic, and clearly was in the midst of a mental health crisis. There's no question about that. But here's the thing. There are trans people all over the world. There are anti-Semitic people, unfortunately, all over the world, and people filled with plenty of political hate all over the world. And mental health issues are not unique to the United States. And yes, we should do more to address them, but it's also an issue all over the world. But this is the only country where shootings like this, this one happened this often. The United States not only has the highest rate of gun violence of any country in the world, it's become a leading cause of death for young people and teenagers in this country. That should make everybody angry. Weaponizing the shooter's identity is meant to distract from what matters. That is what they are doing, trying to distract from what matters. Here's what matters. Today's shooter bought the rifle, handgun, and shotgun they used to do what they did today legally. We live in a country with more guns than people, where there are not universal background checks, there are not bans on assault weapons, and it is far too easy to buy a gun. It's the guns, everyone. It's not really a secret.
Does she, but what policy would she advocate for other than banning? Right? She's asking for banning, but like she says, they were bought legally, and then she brings up, we don't have universal checks. Well, they were bought with a check. They weren't bought at a gun show. They were bought legally.
Yeah.
From a vendor. I believe specifically he bought it, at least in the journal, he talks about buying it at a pawn shop.
Yeah. So it would have got a background check then. Yeah.
He talks about how exciting it was.
You want to ban trans people from owning guns, I don't know what your. Or a particular demographic. Otherwise, you're saying that the little old lady can't protect her house. Like,
right.
Which, like,
yeah, what do you say?
Okay, how do you get in the hands of only the good people? Right. Like, that, how do you know who the good people are ahead of time?
Right.
You know, and you definitely wouldn't want to just do it based upon any particular part of the identity, because that would be unegalitarian.
Discrimination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's maybe worth mentioning, and he talks about this in the journal as well, where back in seventh grade when he started first fantasizing about this stuff, he got in trouble. He had like a quick suspension for like a week or something, at the school. And I think the FBI got involved. I think he said, I might be misremembering that, but, it was after Sandy Hook, and he started getting very interested in the idea around this. And a female student in his class, he kind of like creepily asked her, what would you do in the event of a school shooting? And she got really uncomfortable with it. And he got in trouble for that. So like but it seems like that was kind of the only time this type of thing happened. But it is one of those things where you almost wonder if like, was he put on watch or something? In the journal, at least leading up to this, he very much thought the FBI was watching him. He talked paranoid. About it extensively. He was very paranoid about it.
Mm. I mean, it would track with the schizophrenia potentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, because he was thinking about going and trying to find an accomplice, but he didn't know how he would go about doing that.
Yeah, how do you find
that? So he was scouring like comment sections under true crime series and things like that, because he's like, there's got to be a percentage in there of people that are really into true crime that are like me in the way that they fantasize about these things.
Whoa.
He's like, they gotta be in there. But he's like, how do I reach out to people? Like, you can see him going through the logic in his head on this type of stuff.
Jesus.
Where, that would be the internet search type of stuff. I guess you could like maybe his internet searches or something, but then you have like internet privacy stuff.
One thing I want to address Jen Psaki too. Okay. So to defend thoughts and prayers, and to defend talking about motive, because that's what she's saying. They're like, oh, you're making about the identity, so you don't have to discuss the real thing, which is the public policy question that she wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, like, you're talking about thoughts and prayers because you're having a confrontation with evil, and you're trying to appeal your mind to the highest good, the redeeming spirit of mankind.
Yes.
That you look to when you confront evil. What else would you rather do?
Right.
Well, I mean, like, I get that their point is like, but we should do something.
But the thing is, they are doing, like, the FBI is sending out and coming out with help. Like, Cash Patel and Dan Bongino have been very clear about that. And the FBI is like going full and on board on the investigation. They're actually even looking to see if it's like a domestic terrorist situation and stuff like that. Like, they are doing something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not doing what she would prefer. Yeah, but my whole point is that that's the rhetoric. But I'm trying to cut past that to say, like, the understanding the motive is the way we actually fight this stuff.
That's my
thoughts, right? Man. Because if you can't grasp the motive, if you can't put yourself into the shoes of that person, you might become that person. Because you have to develop out of the shoes of that person the antidote. It's like venom, right?
Yeah.
Venom in small doses can inoculate you against venom, right? Anti-venom is made from venom. So the antithesis of nihilism is made out of looking at that nihilism and consciously rejecting it with the redeeming spirit of heroism that defines the Western civilization that we come from, right? Like, that there's, like, that's why we told stories about heroes that overcame great trials, because that's a lot of where our sense of meaning comes from. And it seems like a young man that got lost, and in the absence of not finding any meaning that was there, decided that there was none, and that he was so arrogant, such a godlike complex, that he could judge everything, could judge all of existence, and then use this act. Now I get obsessed with this act, but like in the heritage of these other actors that did this shit, do something terrible to try to send a message, right? And like, what do you do with that message? You have to reject it. How do you reject it? Well, you appeal to the highest moral goods and values.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
But that's how you fight it. Go make something inspiring.
Yeah.
That rejects nihilism. That's how you fight it. Because if we ban the guns, people are going to do awful stuff. Like, that's not solving the problem. That's a symptom.
Look at the stuff that was in the Scotland thing.
Right.
Like the migrants tracking down those girls, and they had to like bring out an axe and stuff like that.
I'm not sure how true. I did see something about that maybe not being true. Like a selection
bias. It's become very mimetic.
Thing. Yeah.
But that's the thing too, is like, because like, I think that there's like, rightfully so, conservatives are looking at the trans thing, because like, there's obviously a direct we're seeing a correlation here with all these different trans shooters. But like, there's a deeper thing, and this is what you were getting at, Joe, earlier, is that there's a, like, the trans thing is like a coping mechanism for that underlying nihilistic like axiom of these people's beliefs. So then they go to the trans stuff and like these identity issues as a way to cope with it. Mm-hmm. And then like, this guy is kind of almost regretting the trans decision. But he kind of takes it, like, the nihilism to its most logical outcome after the fact. So like, a lot of people are using the trans thing to kind of like cope with their nihilism, which is probably not a healthy coping mechanism. But then people like, this is like the logical conclusion. Yeah. Like, that's the way that I view the whole
two questions. Thing, right? And I don't mean either of these questions as a judgment of other people who've done this, but I'm just curious, because we haven't discussed it yet. Were there any antidepressive drugs?
Good question.
And was there a hormone blocker period or a hormone taking period?
I don't know about the hormone blockers.
I didn't see.
I have read, if I recall correctly, that there may have been medications that this person was on. Hmm. And actually, RFK Jr. Has committed to figure that out.
Yeah, because I don't believe he went through like an actual transition. Like, he just kind of grew out his hair and tried to be more feminine. That seems to be more the case.
And change his name.
Yeah, and change his name when he was 17. Like, that's also relevant. Is like, which also kind of puts you into the head of the family structure he was probably in. As if you're changing your name at 17, that's probably a. You know, like, there's probably
the parents probably there, right? maybe they didn't dig it if they're Catholic, you know, but they didn't like say no to
but,
changing
but
the name.
Blue church that's is a thing wanted. Too, like, there's highly liberal kind of woke churches that are all that's about true. The trans stuff, like, that's also, and this is Minnesota,
yeah, you know, well, and obviously he didn't hate his parents that much, right?
He seemed to praise his parents a lot.
You wouldn't think this is like driving from like, I wasn't able to embrace my identity sort of place.
No, he talks about a lot how much he loves his parents.
Yeah.
In it. And like, there's so much like, I don't want to disgrace my family name. I don't want this to be a shameful thing for my parents.
So that kind of works against.
I'm just so curious about this. Like, that's how he's.
Yeah, you could see the right wing come out with a narrative that's something like, you know, this is because of trans ideology, right? And while it bears a feature, it's not fundamentally that.
I think the trans ideology is like a coping mechanism for the belief structure underlying. That it has.
Yeah, well, it's an outrage for meaning.
Most of the time, trans ideology is kind of
that. Well, and people rely on their identity for meaning all the time, mm-hmm. right? But this person's like looking for one. So anyways, on the drug thing for RFK, let's
yeah, here's RFK just talking about wanting to launch an investigation here.
Studies to find out what the ideology of that is. And we're looking for the first time at psychiatric drugs, you know. Yeah. He's kind of mad shooting. People have had guns in this country forever. When I was a kid, we had shooting clubs at our school. People, kids, my classmates, and other people would bring a .22 rifle with their guns to school and park it in the parking lot. Nobody was shooting. So there's never been a time in America, in the history of humanity, when people walked into a crowd, into a church or a movie theater or a school or a crowd of strangers that just started randomly shooting. It's happening in our country. It's not happening around the world. And there are many other countries that have comparable levels of guns that we have in this country. We had comparable levels in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and people weren't doing that. Something changed, and it dramatically changed human behavior. And one of the culprits we need to examine is whether the fact that we are the most over-medicated nation in the world, and that a lot of those are psychiatric drugs that have black box warnings on them, that warn of suicidal and homicidal ideation. So we are doing those studies right now for the first time, and we will have an answer.
So,
I think it's definitely a factor. That's interesting.
I think it's definitely a factor, and it's pointing to something. But I do want to slightly quibble a little bit on the interest here of what we're talking about. I have a theory about this that I've been noodling on. I don't think I've ever said it out loud, so forgive me. But child sacrifice was practiced all over the world. It was stamped out by Romans, Christians, and ended in many places in the world. And if you look at like the Old Testament, it's full of, you know, contending with this too. Like the thing about what was the bulldog god? Baal worship, Moloch worship, those deities did child sacrifice, right? And those religions did.
That was like kind of a big piece of the Old Testament was the Abraham and Isaac sacrifice.
Right. And the Romans hated the Carthaginians in part because child sacrifice. Right. And you had, and that went way back, right? That even when they were just, you know, pagan Rome didn't like those guys in part for that. I think it's like the underlying of that is like, why was child sacrifice a thing? You know, like, why did that happen? It's the ending of like one of the most precious things that you have the most attachment to. And it's, unless you've had kids, it's hard to understand how animal your love for your child is, how like, when I watched my son be born for the very first time, like I can feel my brain rewire itself, you know, like this fundamental overflowing of, oh my God, I'm a dad and I would do anything for this little kid. And that doesn't go away. It just keeps going, right? As they get older, as you have more or whatever, it just grows and expands. And a religion that says we're going to kill that and burn it as a sacrifice is like a vision of the deity as like the worst parts of nature. Like think like Nietzsche, right? Like Nietzsche made this point, like the lion that leads the lamb is not, doesn't feel bad about it, but human beings will watch that and they'll be like, oh my God, that poor lamb, you know? And that thing, that moment of like, oh God, nature is super metal, right? As an adult, that's how you deal with it. But as a little kid, it's a moment. I actually had this moment with my son recently. We were in Oregon and we caught a bunch of crawdads to cook up. He was pumped on catching the crawdads, dude. He was just slaying crawdads, just scooping them up and having a great time. But when it came time to eat it, he was like, whoa, this is a moment, you know, because he's like, he's had elk and deer and cow and chicken. And he's, you know, we own chickens. Like he's seen the chickens die, you know, and he knows that's part of the cycle of life. But like to be that moment where he's consuming, being part of nature that way was a moment for him. Like we had a whole discussion before going to bed about how that made him feel and how that was a very uncomfortable feeling to be for that. And that's like something human about that, that contention with that. My point being that there's like that religion that says like this is part of life is just this harshness, this and it can lead into this nihilism. And I think those religions are kind of based on that in a way. That's why we rejected them and we're outcompeted them, is because a religion based upon the redemptive nature of the nobility of the human spirit can overcome that. And if you feed that demon, I mean that morally, technically, I don't know how I mean that, but if you feed that thing, it results in a culture that celebrates child sacrifice. And what that really means is the sacrifice of the most precious thing we can do in our life.
Yeah.
And I think these guys are like tapping into that underlying thing that's always there. And maybe the SSRIs are making it worse or whatever, but it's like, it's a human thing to like, I'm just part of this terrible reality where the innocent suffer and the strong are rewarded for their strength.
I was having a conversation with an old friend of mine who works in the funeral business, who I know watches the show. So, hey, he was telling me, because he sees a lot of like death and dealing with grieving families and stuff like that, and like helping the families grieve over death and those things. And he was telling me that kind of as the world seems to be getting more secular, and funerals are becoming a lot less religious, a lot of families are not dealing with their grief well anymore. They don't have like, there's a lot of like the celebrations of life and things like that. Those things are starting to decrease a lot of ways. Mm. And he has a big concern that people in general are becoming a lot less, there's a lot more of a fear of death that is growing and growing and growing. Mm. And people don't have like a comfortable relationship with death anymore. There's like death avoidance. There's a lot of death avoidance that's happening. And we're kind of talking about that as like, I wonder what that does to this collective psychology at large. Cause like I grew up in I went to a private Christian school, and there's a lot of talk, cause you talk about the afterlife and you talk about a lot of theology, and there's a lot of like death talk that happens in there. And I feel like that's like very comfortable when like it gives you a healthy relationship with grieving and death. Like, you know, when people die, it's still very sad, but like it kind of helps you with a grieving process there. But as people are becoming more secular, they're abandoning those grieving processes now. And there's like, I almost feel like it ties into what you were saying of like,
there's something there.
There's something there that exists there now. Yeah. Now.
Because you don't have a way to contend. You don't have a lens in which to contend with the harshness of reality that we're all going to die. You know, like that, the Stoics is at memento mori, like meditating on death allows you to, the idea being that you can accept that you are finite and only have so much time, that in order to live, you must be part of this chain of suffering that is existence. The question is, can you redeem it with virtue? Would be how the Stoics would contend with that, right? Like, can you contend with that like a man and stand up and like make the best of it? Or do you become a resentful, nihilistic cunt and then go take that out on the world? And that could be everything that's like a continuum too. It's everything from like a school shooter to like the person that just is a dick to everyone in their life because they're afraid to die, you know, and you know who you are. Because that's a real person. Like, I've known those people, and they're not everywhere, but they're out there, you know, because they see themselves as like, I'm so smart, religion's all bullshit and all that kind of stuff, and there's nothing there, and therefore I can contend with my intellect how much wiser I am than every other human being on the planet's ever believed in an afterlife or dealt with death otherwise.
Yeah. This is actually why I think it's healthy to read the manifestos, because it helps you kind of get into their minds and understand. And if you are like a virtuous person or somebody that can kind of contend with those ideas without it being like consuming you or something like that, I think it's almost healthy to give you a read of like, oh, there's people that believe some like stuff. Like, there's people that take these like resentful ideologies and this nihilism to their full conclusion. And I think hiding that stuff away is very dangerous for a society. Like, there's an element of like, there is like a copycat element of this, which like, and I get the copycat argument where this guy, you know, he idolized these people and stuff like that. So like, there is that argument there. But I also think it's like, it's very useful for just like good men to be able to read this stuff and contend with it.
Yes. Yeah, so like,
you know what I mean?
Go ahead.
Oh, no. You guys go for it.
Well, I was only going to say that that is an interesting debate,
yeah,
right? Is like, how should we contend with this phenomena, like the manifesto being one part of that. Like, can you suppress it? Like, should you suppress it? How do you deal with these issues on a population scale is a very difficult question. Like, I think there's something true you're saying. Like, it's hard to get until you've had a confrontation with death and the bleakness of a meaningless existence, like in your soul. It's hard to put yourself in the place of the Nazi prison camp guard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to put yourself in the place of the school shooter or whatever and see the world from their view, reject it, and do something else and like reach to a higher place. That is really difficult work that most people won't do. So the argument could be, it could be like, this is a kind of wisdom that the wise should seek.
Yes.
You know, but not the kind of wisdom that the everyday person maybe needs to get on hand, because there's a lot of people with mental issues who get into this and then they're like, well, I kind of want to fucking do that too, like this guy did.
Right. Well, and there's always, you know, the copycat concern, right, of acts like this.
Yeah.
What you guys are talking about reminds me of the Solzhenitsyn quote from Gulag Archipelago, where he says, the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart. Mm. And I think this is exactly kind of the situation that we find ourselves contending with here. Is like, this is a spiritual battle between good and evil. Whether you are overtly religious or spiritual or not, this is a battle between the force of good and the force of evil. Whether or not this kid was, you know, demonically possessed or in some other way compromised or whatever, he was vulnerable to evil thoughts and ideologies and acted on those. And actually, you can see in the video that he had satanic imagery written all over his magazines, some of which were specific to some variety of like satanic, like terrorist organizations, like the Order of Nine Angels and this 764 terrorist network, which
I don't know what these are.
Yeah, these, I've only just learned of these, but you know, they are groups of people that worship Satan and want to do evil things in the world. And so, I mean, to me, like you're talking about, as the world becomes more secular, you know, people kind of lose our meaning. Like, I think that is the societal issue we have to contend with, is like, as we lose faith, as we lose like a Christian nation, we find ourselves less able to contend with the evil of the world because we don't have a foundation from which to battle. Right. Yeah, yeah. Or something to fight for.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that's the solution, is people finding their way to something that they find true and virtuous and good, which I believe in God. And that's for me, that's what that is. And obviously we're seeing in all these things, right? You talk about the Newtonian physics of culture, as much as we're seeing sort of the trans ideology take over, the nihilism take over, the transhumanism takeover, whatever it is that's sort of very, you know, self-God oriented, there's also this massive wave of people who are going the other way and who are like reigniting, you know, faith in God. And I'm one of those. Like, I was raised that way, but it's not something that I've carried through my whole life. There's been a reemergence in the last 10 years for me that has been very meaningful and has provided me a lot of purpose and vision for my life and the way I want to live and the way I want to treat other people and the things that I value in the world. And so I think hopefully if anything good can come from this, it's people recognize, okay, this is a manifestation of evil. I'm going to actively choose not to go that way.
Mm. Well, and this is like actual evil versus like the rhetorical evil that is so often laden in our politics, where everybody's just kind of like, that's evil, that's evil, that's evil. And there's like narrative evil. This is like actual evil, where it's like a pronatalism versus antinatalism. Like, should people be alive? Should people exist? Like, it's like a very like deep metaphysical question that is at the heart of this, where you're like, whoa, like you read through this guy's journal and you kind of watch those, watch the video of him, and you're like, whoa, this is like, I think a lot of people operate in the world and they don't see like actual evil, and they're kind of like blinded to that, or you're like, whoa, this is like something different than you know, like whatever the things I see on TV all the time
about, evil exists. Evil fucking exists, you know, like it is real, right? I mean, like, and it's interesting to me, like, we talk about how he was sort of nondescript perhaps in his objection to religion overall. He had, you know, anti-Semitic things, he had anti-Christian things, anti-Islamic things, but he had a picture of Jesus taped to the top of his body target, like his shooting target. So like any shot at Catholic school, like this was targeted at Christianity specifically. Why?
I think there's an element of this is the place he chose. I think he could have chosen a bunch of people, like, and he documents that in this journal, is that he had a bunch of different places that he was thinking about going. He just kind of ended up doing the most convenient in a way. But like, it is the thing where I think he does have a hatred of Christianity that exists there, but he it's like a fundamental hatred of, I hate people who believe in things.
Yeah.
Like, I hate people who believe in hope. I hate people who believe and can have just faith and stuff. Like, yeah. It's like he hates the idea of religion as a whole in a way. Like, and I think Christianity is just like the easiest target in the moment in that time. But if he was in a neighborhood that was more primarily like, where it was like a synagogue that was close by, or like a mosque close by, like, I think he would have chosen any of them.
Right. And he went to that school. Right. And it's a proximal to him.
Well,
right?
He's just a few blocks away from his apartment.
It's
too.
It's the time in his life when there was a bunch of people telling him, and I'm just speculating here, but there's a time in his life where everyone's saying like, no, your purpose and meaning, it looks like this. Mm-hmm. And then like he rejected that. And then he sought meaning in other things, found them to be shallow. And then said, well, it's all this. Therefore, you know, I'm gonna punish the thing that tried to make things good. You know what I mean? Just to show how much I hate, you know, the idea of goodness itself.
Yeah, like and it probably is like he grew up around a lot of Christians and probably saw a lot of like good faith people and things like that. And he was just like, that's a target to hit, is because like those people have that thing that I hate so much.
Well, and it might even be, and once again speculating, but it's the shortcomings that often really make this what it is, right? It's Christians contending with their humanness and being flawed and not being the Christians that they say they are going to be that really drive people to say, hate the church, hate people in religion, hate religion, religiosity in general. That can really contaminate it. And that's not putting the onus on the flawed Christians. That's just saying like, this person has this expectation of reality that's not real, right? That's that there is going to be like an obvious ultimate good person who's going to, you know, make everything better in that sense.
If that was that person, it was Jesus.
He's the one he wants to kill just to spit in the face of of that thing because of his own suffering, right? Because that's like the underlying motive, right? Is that this is a suffering human being who decided to feed into that, to embrace the child sacrifice, religiousify it, and make it into a anti-philosophy.
It's interesting that you say that because he had a line early on in the journal that was like, the more I learn the truth of this world, the more I hate it, kind of a thing. And that was kind of an interesting. Well, and it's also like kind of what you were saying, Joe, where it is interesting that we have such a, there's like this spiritual revival that seems to be happening with like Gen Z and millennials. There's this like reawakening to spiritual ideas and Christianity and things like that. Like, it is interesting that that's happening right now. Like, you're even seeing it. It's becoming like cool to talk about like history of the Bible on like the Flagrant podcast or on Joe Rogan, kind of a, you know, like that's very interesting that that's happening.
But I don't think
right
that
now.
That's just like a superficial phenomenon. I think it's a fundamental discomfort with the depravity of the world that we find ourselves in, that we see on the internet every day, whether we want to or not. You got children dying in Gaza. You got videos of that. You got school shootings happening. Like, it's very easy to see and find evil now. And I think there's like this aversion, this like really deep seated thing in people that's saying like, I am not here for this. And like, there's gotta be something better, and they're seeking it out and they're finding it.
Yeah. It's like who would have thought you'd have guys like, you know, like I find it just weird, is like the Flagrant podcast. They're like hosting Christians to have debates with atheists because they find it interesting. And apparently the internet wants to see that now. Whereas it's sort of like during the early Jordan Peterson phenomenon, where he had those big debates with Sam Harris over the usefulness of religion and stuff like that. And those were like huge events that happened. There was like four of them. You know, like that Genesis lecture series that Jordan Peterson did in those in the early days of his kind of heyday were hugely impactful. Like, they were impactful on me. They're hugely impactful on a lot of people, on the idea, and on a lot of like these very specific ideas. Like, his Cain and Abel Genesis lecture was one of the like best lectures I've ever seen on the internet.
Well,
and it was dealing about these topics.
That's the thing that pisses me off about Jim Paskey, right? Is the Saki. The people actually trying to solve the problem, which is to redeem the culture by talking about the underlying structure of meaning in humans, is the one person that she can't tolerate, mm-hmm. will ever tolerate.
Yeah.
Right? And like that is the actual solution, as RFK Jr. pointed out. We've had guns in this country for a long time, but school shooting is only a thing recent. Relatively recently, 30
yeah.
years,
yeah.
right? So, like, why is that?
Exactly.
And obviously, there's the drug part of it, but obviously, there's a culture part of it. There's obviously a culture that says, you know, like, that makes stuff without the kind of opportunity for redemption in the stories we tell about ourselves and as human beings,
yeah,
right? And if it's only ever that, right? I mean, you could look into that dark hole, but if you don't have that redemptive arc, you know, that's like, it's going to give someone no way out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's one of these things where I've always hated how common the phrase like mental health crisis is always thrown around, like it's a mental health problem. And so it's like,
yeah.
to me, it's much more of like an idea problem. There's like these idealistic mind viruses that infest young people and grow into this thing. And then we try to put cope over top of it with like, well, maybe you should be a boy, or maybe you should be a girl, or maybe you should just take a bunch of these pills and things like that. It's like, those are like band-aids to a much larger wound that exists in the culture. And it's mm-hmm. like, there's these like evil ideas that creep into young people's minds. And it's like, we need to like cut those off. We need to find ways to cut those off. And it's like, we can blame all the other stuff. And those other stuff is a problem. Like I think the medication thing is like a huge problem. Cause like it amplifies the bad ideas with like hormonal issues and things like that, which are like these physical problems that are really difficult to deal with. Cause it like twists your brain chemistry in so many ways. But like, it's like, yeah, it's like those like really parasitic ideas are like at the bottom of this whole tree of nastiness.
I agree. And I think it's a question also of whether or not those ideas creep in or grow organically in the minds of young people. And maybe, you know, from a nature versus nurture standpoint, they do because of just the nature of our culture. But maybe they're put there, right? Maybe, you know, these movements are seeded in a way. And we talked about this before we started recording. By entities that want to use them for their own ends, right? I mean, we know we have evidence of the intelligence community sort of infiltrating and co-opting all sorts of movements to get them to do their bidding. Agent provocateurs are a thing. Like, we have lots of evidence
music,
around this sort of
punk
stuff.
Punk movement, hip hop movement, stuff like that is a big thing, which is where music. You get the kind of radical dissidents oftentimes. Right.
And this, the trans community sort of is the newest wave of that sort of radical dissident community. And my thesis, I think, is that they are being used in a way to create chaos, to be, you know, injected into society to create these events that occur to destabilize civilization, to destabilize the good, to dishearten people, to cause chaos and pain.
It's also like the peak of the decadence, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be centrally planned. It may be, right? And it may be actors who are planning and doing things. But it's that paired with this arc of, well, we've solved a lot of the major problems, and in that abundance, with the lack of material suffering, people fall back into, well, now I have to do the hard work of developing my own ontology of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than taking on that hard work, as you come into adulthood of like, well, I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to commit to that, or I'm going to commit to some structure of that, of understanding an identity, instead I'm going to reject it all and I'm going to be a nihilist.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's the, then that's normal for a teenager to do. Like, it's normal as a teenager for you to question your surroundings and start to like, okay, I'm going to develop my own ideas about the world. Mm-hmm. That's a good, normal thing.
Right.
The question is if the culture goes, like, contends with that by going, I don't know.
Like, sure, yeah, you do you.
Go seek pleasure at cost of all things.
Maximize your happiness.
Or does the culture go, no, that's actually the wrong path.
Yeah.
And you need to go this way in one route or another, right? Like, is that the family? Is that like the broader culture? Is that, you know, the school, is it the government, whatever it is. But in this case, it doesn't seem like the overriding policy is to try to help people actually. It's just to enable people to continue to devolve into the chaos that they find themselves in.
And it's a civil society problem fundamentally, right? It's all the thing that's not government, right? Which is the hardest problem to solve, because it puts the question on you, individual who lives in this society, to do something. Right. I mean, like, was there a person in this person's life who's like had a relationship with this kid and then just kind of ignored it because it was uncomfortable and they were weird, mm-hmm. rather than treating them with love and kindness like a neighbor that you loved?
Yeah.
You know, like where it's that place to get to that you're actually contributing to your society that builds the society that we want, regardless of the religious question. Right. I mean, like, if you look to politics to derive your meaning, That's how you get fascism. That's how you get progressivism. That's how you get communism. That's how you get all the totalitarian ideas, is out of this. And they all say it themselves. They all articulate themselves. Well, we need a politics of meaning. That was mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton, right? That's also Mussolini. We need to pull everybody together to give us a national identity so people have a purpose, because all you plebs don't know what your purpose is, right? And that's actually that. It can be done that way, although it fails because it's government and it's not possible to derive meaning top down. It has to be generated within. It has to be generated by our culture and the stories we tell about ourselves and the way we treat each other. Do you put the shopping cart back?
Yeah.
You know, or when you see a person who is suffering, do you reach out?
Yeah.
You know, do you have that hard conversation with that loved one that you need to have?
Yeah.
Early, not ignoring it because you got bigger problems. No, that's the number one and most important problem in your life. It should be.
Yeah.
You know, and what chain of failures led to this and the result of that? And that's like weird because it's flipping on its head. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm pissed off at this kid too. I mean, obviously, wasn't dead, I would want to string him up. And the absolute evil repulses me. But the way we solve this, Saki and crew on that side, it seems to me that we need to revivify a culture of life,
yeah,
and life affirmness, not more death.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Well, to conclude, it seems like what we're going to end up with is more surveillance.
Oh, give me a big old black pill.
Big old black pill to close it out. On the end of that beautiful cherry. I'm sorry, I had to just
bring us back down again.
this is the thing to never let a crisis go to waste.
Exactly.
Always be wary of these types of things. There's probably some new programs that are going to be put in place coming down. There's some contracts being made with companies on internet surveillance and stuff like that. So here is a from, I believe he's the CEO of a project called Gideon. And here is him talking about this with Fox News.
Correct. I am now about to launch Gideon, America's first ever AI threat detection platform built specifically for law enforcement. It scrapes the internet 24/7 using an Israeli grade ontology to pull specific threat language and then routes it to local law enforcement. It's a 24/7 detective. It never sleeps, and it's going to get us in front of these attacks.
Would it have picked up on this, do you think?
100%. I wish my program would already be up. We're not launching until next week. I've got a dozen agencies on board, Trace. I just onloaded a major Northeast agency with over 2,700 sworn. This is America's early warning system.
Sooning.
And that's like ignoring the problem.
Right. This is let's stay at the top level. Don't consider the cultural implications. We'll just track the internet for troubled people and everyone at the same time.
We'll minority report it.
And we'll minority report the fuck out of
it. It's a panopticon of the internet, right? Yeah. Oh, God.
This is, you know, Patriot Act mini.
Man, the Groypers got to be losing it right now. The Israeli agents saying all that shit.
Well, yeah, that is the thing. He was a former Israeli specialist, and this is an Israeli program.
Israeli ontology is a heck of a word.
I know. Is that our new thing? It's no longer military grade. It's Israeli grade.
It is interesting.
Whoa.
I find it interesting. I just grokked Gideon because I'm still learning here. But mm-hmm. Gideon is a prominent figure in the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Old Testament, featured in the book of Judges. Mm-hmm. He served as a military leader, judge, and prophet who delivered the Israelites from oppression by the Midianites around the 12th century.
The book of Judges is wild. Yeah. Worthy read on Hebrew history.
that'll be my homework.
It's a wild book. It's just a lot of that. It's just a lot of stories about exactly that type of thing.
Mm. Yeah, it says it can scan Telegram, which is interesting.
Oh.
TikTok, Reddit, Discord.
There may have to be a future episode coming up where we dig it further into that program, because it sounds like that's going to be a new thing that we all have to contend with and consider in our highly surveilled
lives.
I bet
this guy just got some good investors. So.
Yeah,
I bet you Peter Thiel's involved
somehow. This is probably a good soft launch sooning for his project.
Oh yeah, he's like, oh, I want into that here.
No, it's money, the most Prince disturbing Gilbert. Part of it, right? It's like it feels very post 9/11 ish.
Yeah,
know? Like tragedy happens. We're like, wow, we just so happen to have this particular solution, or the bump stock ban right after Las Vegas.
Yeah,
which is still strange.
Yep. Lots of questions, unfortunately, not a lot of answers yet, but we're going to bring them to kind of bring it back to the white pill. Friends watching and listening, if you have somebody in your life who you think might be struggling, reach out and never lose hope, because the good can and will prevail, and I think we all want to be on that side.
I also have a question for the comments, because I'm really curious on people's thoughts around this. Is what do you think should be done about manifestos and things like that?
Yeah.
Like how publicly available should they be? Like, do you agree with me on kind of the idea of like, I think it's kind of useful to be able to understand what these people think? Because I understand the other argument to that about the prevention of copycats, and you don't want to try to cast them as this like larger than life character and stuff like that. Like, I agree with that. So I'd be curious on the comments on where you fall on that type of issue.
Yeah. And if you'd like to get deeper into the conversation, there is a link for our Discord server in the description below. We'd love to hear from you there. So please feel free to join us. On behalf of David Rand and Kyle Mack, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.